What's up, Tweenerites? Welcome back to another Tweenerite Tennis video today here on the channel. And today we have one of the best college tennis players joining us on the channel today with Ozan Barris from the Michigan State University. And we are very glad to have him on to talk about his experience, what it was like being ranked top 10 for the majority of the season and finishing number 5 in the country in Division 1 for singles, and seeing what he has accomplished this year and the program he's trying to build with Harry back at Michigan. And it's amazing to see where he comes from and what he wants to accomplish in college. He has such an amazing mindset, and we can't wait to share his story with you guys right here on the channel. But before you do, over 80% of you that are watching this video right now are not subscribed. Make sure you are subscribed to the Tweenerhead Tennis channel. Hit that subscribe, leave a like, and comment down below of who you guys want us to interview next. Now, without further ado, here is top 10 college tennis player in this year's rankings, Ozan Barris from Michigan State University.
Now, ready? There, now we know. But I couldn't ask for, honestly, a better start, and I'm going to have you redo it as well, because from not only having goals in tennis, you have goals for your hairstyle. So the next one, before we started recording, was Ozan getting a fade. Correct me if I'm wrong. The fade, and then the long hair in the back, like a ponytail.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take you through it again.
Okay,
I've done every single haircut. I've done every single one.
So start from the beginning. What was the first one?
I mean, I had the buzz cut until I was like 10, 12, you know?
Okay.
And it was pretty intimidating. I had the goggles too. It was pretty badass. I'm not going
to
lie.
I have to find a photo. You have to send me a photo of that.
I'll send you a photo.
That's hysterical.
I used to show up with the backpack. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the backpack, I would have two rackets, guy with goggles, buzz cut. I mean, like, honestly, if I had the courage, I would still do that. But like nowadays, I'm like, I kind of want to look a little aesthetically better, you know?
Aesthetically better.
So I did that, and then went to like the normal hair, just like, you know.
What's like my hair?
Yeah, basically solid in the front, short on the sides, basically, you know.
Thanks.
and then bleach the hair after.
Okay.
And now I've got curly hair when I'm not, you know, this. But what I really want to do, and what I'm doing now, is I'm going to get the man bun in the back and then fade on the sides, because I haven't done that one yet. That's
okay.
What I'm working on.
What's the longest you've ever grown your hair?
1 year.
1 year. And how long did that get?
There's some pictures. I could send those to you too. It got pretty long. That's when I could put a full man bun.
Okay.
Hold on. And I could do a full man bun there, but it didn't look good, honestly, on me, because my hair grows like out.
Same.
It's just curly.
Yeah.
So like it just turns into kind of like a half afro. It's not great.
It's a half afro. Okay. Yours is very different. Yours can grow out. Mine only grows up. So if I leave my hair out, there's no way I'm getting it lower than my neck. Like yours, yours can probably go long.
Mm-hmm. It went to like here.
Okay.
It wasn't crazy. Yeah.
Did you have the beard too, or was it just baby face, long hair?
Yeah, baby face. Yeah, I think if I had the beard, it would be a little better, maybe.
Well,
I couldn't grow it back then.
You would be the tennis Jesus for that matter. So that's how it would work. But Ozan, I can't thank you enough for joining us. And I loved how our conversation started. There's been a lot of, you had an incredible season. We've had a lot of content of you and your personality come out, not only through the Michigan State page, but through Not Your Country Club, through NCAA. And you finished 5 in the nation this year. And I want to start with, was that your expectation at the beginning of the season?
I mean, I went to this season wanting to finish. Honestly, it was a different mindset than in the past, for sure. I wasn't really too focused on NCAAs as a tournament, you know, because I think it's a really tough one to really just put all your marbles into NCAAs.
Okay.
Because it's 1 week, it's one tournament, and really anything can happen.
Yeah.
But I did put a lot of emphasis just on hey, I want to have a great year and I want to be able to finish number one. I think that's a possibility. And I actually think that I could have finished a little bit higher if I had won some matches that, you know, I think I could have won, you know, like against Murphy.
Yeah.
I was up 3-0, 40-30 on his serve in the third set, lose a match to him. And then against, I mean, obviously against Planinsek, had match points. And I think I could have won that match. And then against my only other two losses during the spring were to Popoe. And he honestly, he just played better than me that day. And to Yip Van Assenfalls. And I was not feeling great that day, but I think I kind of checked out a little.
Really?
But yeah, I like, again, the expectation. Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
A little
I
hadn't trained that week.
Yeah. And I think for you guys too, it's having that idea of like constantly playing every single day and learning from your teammates when we visited you guys. A little disappointed that I didn't get to see you and Ronnie because you went to a Futures the following day that I was there. But learning from your teammates, it just takes such a different level of endurance, not only physically, but mentally, because you can... I don't want to like jinx it or anything, but knock on wood, you always get these senses of burnout, right? And keeping that mentality of staying present the whole way through. How do you find that gear or find that extra gear when it comes to dealing with that kind of, it's not my day today, but I can stay positive and focus on the next one?
Honestly, I think this was the thing that actually led me to having a great year this year was last season. I wasn't as much thinking about that. I thought personally, I'm going to play every single week. I'm going to practice every single week at 100%. I'm going to keep improving, and it's just going to be this steady line. And honestly, this was some work I did with my therapist, actually. And I was like, man, like I'm feeling burnt out, like midway through the season. By NCAAs, I was like cooked. Yeah, and it was like,
wow.
Yeah, I was cooked. Like I just mentally, I wasn't there. I didn't really enjoy it. It wasn't fun. And this year it was like, okay, like if we want to peak at the right times, like Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, they're not trying to win the 250s. They're trying to peak for the slams. Yeah. And it's kind of got to be the same thing. Where it's like, throughout the season, you're trying to play, you're trying to have great results for sure. But there's times where you kind of pick it up and then there's times where you come back down. And I think actually, like I even had some injuries during the season for like a week or two. And honestly, those might have been a blessing in disguise because I just had to take a step back from the game.
Wow.
Just take some time for myself. And then I peaked better for some bigger matches.
Wow.
You know, I think it's a tough thing to do in college because you're part of the team and you don't want to let them down. You know, you have an obligation to them. But me personally, I know myself pretty well where it's like I need to be a certain level of cognizance and presence, be performing my best. And if that means I take a week or two off, that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
I was aware of that.
Well, I like how you're aware of that because I feel like not many people are sometimes, especially when you're in the midst of it. And especially when you're in that middle of the season, the NCAAs, not even then. But how do you try to, I don't know, teach your teammates that, or is that something that you really focus on as being one of the top guys on your team and kind of trying to, you've said in previous podcasts and interviews that you're building something special at Michigan State. You have built something special and there's definitely more to come. But is that something that you really try to focus on with the team and Terry? And is that something you talk about?
That's a great question. It's honestly a really great question. I think it's something that more than tennis, it's kind of the way that I live life. Like I think I live a little bit different than other people in the sense that I'm very self-aware. I'm aware of what works for me, what makes me happy, what makes me tick, all those different things.
Okay.
And I kind of try to spread that to other people of just being like, hey, like this is what works for me, you know? And I give the formula even to strangers. I'll be like, hey, this is what I do.
Yeah.
And it's up to them to make that decision. I'm not really going to harp on them and say, hey, like this is the way, because, you know, for Max Sheldon, it's going to be different than for me. For Aris, it's going to be different than me. Ronnie, it's going to be different. Everyone has their own way. And I just tell them, hey, man, like this is what works for me. I like to, you know, kind of pace up and down. I think this could help you, but you got to choose what works. And I think if you get to the point, and this is honestly what I'm always caught.
Today's video is sponsored by the Universal Tennis Power Subscription Service, which allows you to see every decimal of someone's UTR rating when you're playing them to get a better understanding of where they are in terms of level. The Power Subscription is not just for looking at numbers. It's also for great discounts on amazing companies like Fabletics, like Tennis Warehouse, and many other companies. Now, you can check them out using the link in the description below.
Trying to do it's like finding my own truth, finding what works for me. And the more in tune I become with that, the better my results are and the better my life is as well. I try to tell the guys that, because that's really how I live my life. And I think it's worked very well for me, but you know, it's up to them to do what they want with it.
No, it's amazing to hear that kind of self-reflection in that, in the way you speak about it and the way you describe it, because it's such a hard attitude and mindset to have. Was there anything at the beginning that, or was there anything before you came to Michigan State or when you started playing tennis more competitively that kind of that made you have this mindset, or that made you stay in such kind of a positive outlook type of mentality?
I don't know. I mean, I think I could get, I've reflected on my entire life, honestly. I think even from a young age, I just felt like I was a little different. I thought about things very deeply, almost like philosopher, like, I don't know. I just thought about things on a different level. And I think for a while it was actually a detriment to me, because I'd be playing the match and I'd be like overdoing things. It was more of like, hey, like just go out there and play, just enjoy it. I think the triggers for me, I mean, honestly, I think could be traumas, you know, could be growing up in a childhood where sometimes some things don't go your way and you have to think about, oh, am I worth it? Am I this? Am I that? And you have patterns that unfold. And more than anything, I just try to reflect on those and heal those as best as I can. But I don't know. I think everyone has the ability to kind of go to those deeper places. And I find it fascinating how the mind works. And, you know, just the mind is a crazy tool if you learn how to use it. And I'm so intrigued by it. That's what I do in my free time, honestly, other than watching TV. Yeah, I listen to what the greats think. I read about the mind, read about different ways of, you know, programming yourself to be successful. Mm-hmm. And that's been a huge, huge thing for me in the past, actually almost a year from 2 weeks. 2 weeks from now, I started going into that like a year ago.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I went into a heavy before Wichita 25K. And then I finaled that tournament, and honestly, I think since then I've had great results. And I just realized the power of the mind is so, it's crazy. It's crazy.
And so for you, what's, I guess in that perspective too, what's one book or one thing that sticks out to you or that you've thought about constantly when learning about all these different mindsets, learning about all these different possibilities, or how to get the most out of your, mental, I the first word that came to mind was mental palace, but that's just a ridiculous term. But
no, it makes sense.
But like, how do you like, what's one piece of writing that you've learned or that stuck with you the most?
I think you create your own reality is one of the most truthful statements.
Okay.
And I don't think you're in control of everything, you know. That's ridiculous. You know, the world just happens to, you know. But if you're prepared, if you've got a vision, if you say this is what I want, this is something that I actually tell the guys a lot, and like this is gold right here for me at least. If you want this right here, if this is your goal, okay, great. You're right here. We just need to pick all the steps along to get there. That's all that it is. And if you do those steps, you're going to get there. Like it happens. It's happened to me countless times over and over again. So really it's just that process over and over again of what do I want? What do I want my reality to be? Okay, here's where I'm at. Here are the steps to get there. And that's kind of how I think, you know, we can talk about manifestation and the power of the mind, this and that. But more than anything, it's just like set your goal and then do the steps that it takes to get there. That's it.
Yeah. Wow. It just seems so simple to me. When you talk about it like that, it seems so simple, but it takes, and not to put like be the devil's advocate with that, but it just seems so simple. It's just hard for people to capture that once it's just one kind of straight line, because it can always be somewhere else, right?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's simple. This is a crazy thing. It's also easy to sit there for 10 minutes and just do nothing. But at the same time, it's one of the hardest things to do nowadays.
Yeah.
Because you just think, oh, I got to look on my phone. Oh, I got to do this. Oh, I got to do that. Like, it's easy, but it is hard. There's definitely a challenge to it, you know? But yeah.
And if we go now to more of your tennis career and kind of what you've been doing at MSU and Harry and your teammates, one of the big things that I've noticed when you talk to other people that are interviews and creating a program or creating something special at a program for you and Harry and your teammates and the coaching staff, you've been big on creating something special here. And for you, it seems like starting from scratch was a big, not scratch, but you and Harry kind of started at the same time. And that's basically you're starting basically from ground zero to build up the mentality and what the program can be. What made starting from zero or starting from scratch appealing to you?
I mean, honestly, this was the reason why I chose Michigan State. Was I had options of, hey, you know, you can go to one of the top schools, you can be contending for national championships, and you know, that's appealing. It's appealing. Yeah. And there's been a lot of players that went there and went pro as well, and that was something that I wanted to go to college and become a pro after. Pro after college. Mm-hmm. So that was the first thought in my head. I was like, oh, I'm going to go there. And then actually it was between Arizona State and Michigan State. Loved Arizona State. Actually, my visit there was terrific. It was a great time. I loved the coaches, loved the team. And something in my heart, I was just going back and forth for a couple of days, but I was like, man, like I really like something. I want to go to Michigan State. I don't know what it is, but my heart's telling me that. Okay. And when I look back, the reason why is because it's like if I had went to Arizona State, I would have created something.
Yeah.
And it would have been fun. And if I'd went to Texas or Florida or any of these other colleges, it would have been fun to be a part of the team. Yeah. But being part of Michigan State, it's like I play in front of my family. I play in front of my community. I play in front of my friends. You know, it's a university where I've lived. Mm-hmm. And I get to see it go from not being ranked to this year, like in only 2 years, highest ranking ever.
Yeah.
Already been the furthest that a Spartan has been. It's like all these things are special because I'm doing them not just for any college, but like for my home, for my family, for my community. Yeah. And that was what was most appealing. And again, like I said this in my last interview, I was like, I don't want it to just be like this when I'm here. Like I want Michigan State to be top 10 in the country from the time I leave to the next 20, 30 years, like however long it can be.
Yeah. And that, I feel like that drive, and you've kind of set the tone with that, not only for yourself, but for other schools. And when you have kids picking different colleges and why they want to pick different colleges, and that sense of family is not only from your personal family, but the family you've created at Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it can't be.
That's exactly right.
It can't be easy, because I feel like from that perspective too, you do so much and then you get to do it in front of your family. There had to be some favoritism within your family to stay home, right?
Actually, I don't think so. I mean, obviously my mom wanted me to stay home, you know?
Like, yeah.
I think any mother is going to want their kid to stay home. But I don't think too much, you know, she was pretty unbiased about it, which was nice.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And honestly, my initial impressions were, I'm not staying here. I can't stand it. Like, I'm getting out of here. I need to go explore the world. And then I started playing ITF like from 15 to 18, traveling the world. And after I'm done with college, I'm going to be playing pro tournaments all over the world. So it's like, maybe it's not the worst thing for me to be in Oakham, East Lansing for a couple of years.
Yeah.
It's not the worst.
So for your mom too, what's one thing that your mom has said to you that has stuck with you, not only in life, but in tennis?
Honestly, this is going to sound so corny, but
it's okay.
It's actually just good for me to hear. Yeah. She says, you are a good person, Ozan. And I know it's like me personally with what I want to do, I can't really think too much about whether I'm a good or bad person. You know, I'm personally trying to pursue greatness and being the best at what I do. So I don't really care what my image is. No. But just hearing that from my mother of like, Ozan, like at your core, you're a good person. It just gives me some confidence that at least I'm not the worst person. Because at times I think I am, you know, I'm battling out there and it can get ugly. But just having someone who supports me means the world to me.
That's amazing. And for her to come and watch all your matches at home, it must be a different level.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful to have her there. And I mean, honestly, shout out to mom real quick, because I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing today without her. Like we would travel to tournaments from the age of 8 to 15, mm-hmm. traveling and staying in hotels, you know, just grinding, like truly grinding. And she made it work as a single mother. She made it work and I never had to worry about the money. I never had to worry about anything like that. But she was always like, hey, whatever tournament you want to go to, we're going. And it led to me being the tennis player that I am and the human that I am. And honestly, it gives me a lot of motivation to be successful and also to, you know, help her out as well. Because I feel responsible for her. She gave me a chance. She really gave me a chance.
I love that. And I for you too. I don't know if this is going to be a weird question, but did you like your mom watching your matches, or was that extra pressure for you?
No, it wasn't too much pressure, honestly. She's always been laid back, really good mother in that aspect. I'm not going to lie, having Mike watch me as a junior would make me feel so much pressure.
Why?
You!
Please subscribe. Thanks.
Because I know this guy would be on my ass after the match about something. I mean, at this point, actually, like, during CLAs, I don't give a can I swear?
Yeah, you can swear here. I don't mind.
I was like, I don't give a fuck what Mike says, because I know he's going to ream me after this match. But I'm just going to compete. I'm just going to compete, and he can yell at me after the match. But for now, I am just in the zone. I don't care what he thinks.
He's gonna love hearing this.
You gotta send that to him. Just that part.
I'm gonna clip this part and just send it to Harry to show to him, and then we'll be good.
I actually literally said those words to Harry over the phone like the day before, and then, really? And then the next day. Yeah
that's hysterical. That's awesome. That is awesome. All right.
Yeah.
Do you have more tattoos than Thanos, or does Thanos just have all the tattoos in the entire world?
No, he has way more. I've got a couple.
So you and got this one, and then this one.
This one here.
Go with the start with the wrist. Start with the wrist, because I'm curious about these.
So this is 136.
Yep.
If you can see that. It's my favorite number. It's the name of my business as well. Or Barish 136. And honestly, I just see it a lot. Like, it's my favorite number. I see 1036 all the time, 1136 the time. And then I'm just looking around and I see 136. I'm like, okay. I kind of just take it as like, oh, I'm in a good place.
Okay. Like a good omen type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then I've got a 72 here. And that is my mother's birth year. It's also my like second favorite number. It's my jersey number.
I was about to say, that's the jersey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it now, honestly, mostly because it's my mother's birth year, and it kind of just gives me that anchor. So that's the other one. And then we got What If.
Okay.
Here.
Love that.
And I was actually planning to get it like a little cross through it, and the meaning of it would totally change from like, oh, what if, like, what if you could do it all, to I'm not going to leave any what ifs on the table. But I think I'm going to wait a little longer for that, because I want to first make like all those things true where there are no what ifs anymore.
Yeah.
I want to prove some more things to myself.
I like that. Yeah. And go with that one. And then I want to talk about the one inside your bicep.
This one is the adrenaline molecule.
The adrenaline molecule.
I got it with Caxan. Yeah.
Wow.
Or the adrenaline compound. I don't know. But it looks sick. It looks sick.
I don't know what this is, but this is cool.
Exactly. That's actually what we thought. Tash and I went to Chicago after he won the 25K in Decatur.
Yeah.
And we were like, yo, let's get some matching tattoos. And we were like, okay, this is a thick one. Let's do it.
That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
And this one,
Rebel with a Cause.
Love that.
And I feel like that's just kind of who I am. Like, I do things my own way, but I do have a reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
I'm intentful. And then this is a man right here walking into the woods during the night.
Yeah.
And it just means kind of like taking the road less traveled, you know, taking the lonely path in life, because I feel like sometimes I kind of live a different life than others, but that's the beauty of it as well. I've got some other missions than some other people do. That's all right.
So how many do you think you'll get more?
Oh, gonna get so many more. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. That's awesome.
I could literally look at my notes app right now, and I probably have like 8 in there already that
really?
I want a lot of little ones. And then the thing is, the bigger ones, like
I shoulder need to find
an artist to trust.
Okay. So you have a go-to guy in East Lansing?
For this one, I mean, it worked out, but I don't think I'm going to get any more pieces from her. I think I'm going to try to find someone who kind of just get along better with, and I have a little bit more trust in them.
All right. That's fine. I mean, whatever works for you. And for you too, on that tennis path as well, at which point did you know pro level was going to be like achievable? Because I feel like with the way you talk and the way you hold yourself, it's very positive and you're always upbeat. I just feel like you're manifesting it into it's happening and you're going to have success. Yeah. Like what was the turning point for you to say, okay, this is my journey?
That's honestly another great question. So it started when I was 5. I'll just start with the base. When I was 5 years old, I said to my coach at the time, Dan Howard, he said, what do you want to do with tennis? And I said, I want to be the greatest. Or no, I didn't want to be the greatest. I want to be number one in the world. That's what I said.
Okay.
And that was just my dream. Like, that was what I wanted to do. It wasn't fathomable, but it was like, this is what I want to do with my game, with my tennis. And from there, you know, there's so many progressions. You just keep going. And I didn't really believe that I could do that. And it was too big of a goal also. Like, when you're playing juniors, you can't be thinking about being number one in the world. It's not even in the same league. So I kind of reframed it.
Yeah.
Reframed it with my therapist about 2 years ago. And that's been a lot of the work. But when it really hit me, like, oh, I can be a professional, is I was struggling to win pro matches quite a bit. Yep. And then once I finaled that Wichita tournament, I was like, oh, I actually can do this. So that was kind of the first like thing in my mind of, oh, it's possible. It's possible. Yep. And then the next step that I needed to prove to myself was, can I win a pro title? Like, can I just win one? Can I come out as a champion of one pro tournament?
Yep.
And when I won the East Lansing tournament, something in my head just clicked where I was like, this is possible.
Yeah.
Like I can win five matches. I can win five matches in 1 week. I can win a title. If I can do that at just higher levels, I can be a pro. And once that happened, I remember like my mindset was just like, oh, I can definitely do this. I believe it.
Wow. And does that change, or does your mindset change when you play your college dual match versus playing a semifinal of a 25K?
It's different energy wise. It's okay. Very different energy wise because I think in college, it's more beneficial to be extremely loud, extremely rambunctious, have that energy going for you, all that, because you only have one match. You have 2 hours, 3 hours on the court where you just, it's like a full court press. You're just going as hard as you can.
Yeah.
And you want to get that all. And because you're giving yourself the best chance. But the thing is, if you try to do that in pro tournaments, or if you try to do that in NCAAs where it's five, six matches, it's almost impossible.
Okay.
Because it's so taxing on the body. Like I'll play a 2 hour match in college and the next day I'm like, man, I'm tired. Like I'm really, really tired because yeah. I'm just so much energy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't sustain that over a week, which is the difference between, I think it's one of the biggest differences between pro and college, honestly.
Okay. Because I always think, now watching Shelton play and watching some of these college guys play, some of the bigger guys on tour, and you see the energy level just be so different in terms of how much they give or how much they yell. It makes mm-hmm. me think, like, why wouldn't that type of energy not confuse someone that never played a college tennis match, but why it would benefit them in the longer run of a match versus someone that never played a college match?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's beneficial. Like, honestly, it still works for me in pro tournaments. I'm still going to be loud and have that energy because I play my best. I kind of feel like, honestly, the energy that Ben Shelton has, I'm similar where I want to have that. I want to have that cutthroat energy and I'm coming for you the whole time. I think the difference is, and this is at least what I've noticed with Ben, it seems like he first came on and he was like super loud, super loud, super loud. And now if you watch him, like he still has those outbursts, but it's more managed throughout the week.
Gotcha.
Because I think he's playing the tournaments to win the whole thing. Like he doesn't want to be celebrating like crazy when he gets a first round win because he knows there's so much more left to do.
Yeah. And have you found that balance when you play, or are you still trying to find that and manage that throughout a tournament for a pro tournament?
I think I found it in NCAAs. You know, I was, more than anything, one of my goals during the tournament was I wanted to win really bad because I thought this is going to like set me for the summer. Like if I can win this tournament, it's so much confidence going into all the tournaments throughout the summer. So that was kind of the thought. And I didn't win it, but I made it. I played five matches and I felt physically fine. The most matches that I'll play in a pro tournament is five, seven if I'm qualifying. But, you know, physically, I know I'm there. Mentally, I know I can lock in for a week, for 2 weeks, however long it is. And I found the energy that works for me. So now it's just honestly, once you find it, then it's just practicing it, doing it every week and being disciplined with it.
Yeah. And in that sense too, for you, how you've talked about this before, I believe, was it with Nate? You said you still have something, and you talked about it here too. You have something left on the table to achieve, or along the lines of job's not done type of mentality. So for you, after your 4 years at Michigan State, what do you want to say you accomplished there?
I mean, I don't even know if it's going to be four, you know. I just want to know that I am in the best position possible to leave.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense for me to stay anymore. For college, I don't really think any goals make too much sense. I mean, I want to win NCAAs. That's one simple one. And I want to win NCAAs as a team. You know, I want the top of the top in the college game. But yeah. I don't think any of those are really going to hold me in college, because the ultimate goal is I want to make a profession living as a professional tennis player.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where it's like, you know, I want to do the pro stuff. That's where I'm really at. But in college, I want to be at the top. I want to win some rings. And I think as a pro, it's just the mentality is any week that I'm playing, I'm there to win the whole thing. Like, I'm not coming to get points anymore. I'm not coming to get my ranking up. The only reason I'm showing up to the tournament is I want to finish in first place. And then you'll see me celebrating and you'll see me whatever it is. But if I'm not winning the finals, then there's still work to be done that week.
That's a very... Do people say you have a Mamba mentality? Because that's it. Like what you just said is like the most Kobe thing I've heard.
I mean, yeah, that's the mentality that I'm working on. You know, it's a process as well, but it's what I've been working on for a while. And it changed. You know, actually, this was if there was one takeaway from the tournament, it was this. I've actually talked about this to a lot of people. I thought that my takeaway from the tournament was going to be that I won it. And I was like, oh, like I can actually do this. Like I can really get what I want. Like I set my vision on winning NCAAs and I can do that. Yeah. And I know that I can win challengers. Oh, I'm going to do that. So that's how I thought it was going to be. But it was actually the inverse where it was like, I know that I can win, but I don't want anything other than that. Like all I want is to be the best.
Yeah.
Like I got all these texts from people and, you know, I did do a great job. I'm not denying that, but I got all these texts from people saying, hey, great job. You had a great tournament, semifinals. You're the first Spartan to do it. That's awesome. And in my head, I'm like, no. Like, I want to win.
Yeah.
Like, even if I lost in the finals, it was like, no, like, I came here to win it. And yeah. I just realized that the only way that I'm satisfied is if I'm holding the trophy at the end of the week. That's a success for me. Otherwise, it's a failure. And I'm not afraid of failures, but I'm going to keep growing from them.
So for you, and you've talked about goals, you've talked about this, and not necessarily having one at the beginning of the Michigan State season, but as a professional too, because we're getting into that summer swing with futures and challengers and possibly the US Open. What's your goal by the end of 2024 for you for as a professional player?
Honestly, like this is what I'm saying. I'm kind of done with goals. Like I have one goal for any tournament that I play in. I have only one goal. I don't care if I'm playing in a 15K or if I'm playing in the US Open. I'm there to win the title. That's the goal for every single tournament. I'm there to win the title because at the end of the day, if I win 25Ks or if I win 250s, my ranking is going to go up.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't matter what tournament I'm playing. If I'm winning and just getting that one goal, I'm going to be top 100 in the world. I'm going to get the whatever. Like all those other goals will just happen by just being so simple. I'm here to win the title. If I do that, I'm in good shape.
Can I play devil's advocate for a second?
Mm-hmm.
Could people say that's narcissistic or is that just competitiveness?
You know, I think there's a very fine line between narcissism and having the right ego that is necessary to be great, because you can listen to John Jones and you can listen to Conor McGregor and you can listen to a lot of those guys and you can hear what they're saying and you can say, man, this guy is messed up in the head. And the truth is they are. Because at the end of the day, those guys are. Like, they're not thinking clearly. They're living in their own world. But you can't fight the fact that, like, they are some of the greatest to do it. Mike Tyson, great example. I mean, you hear his interviews after, and you're like, this guy's not right in the head.
He's nuts. And he's absolutely nuts.
For me to go where I want. Exactly, yeah. And for me to go where I want, like, I don't really care if people think that. Because if I know myself, then I'm fine with it. People have their own say, you know, it's not up to me. I want to be the best. That's all that I know.
I love that, Ozan. And I can't thank you enough for your time. I know you were having dinner with your friends, but I really do appreciate you joining us. If you guys want to follow Ozan, follow the Michigan State tennis team for next year, make sure to check out the links down in the description below. Make sure you leave a like, subscribe, all of that. We'd love to have you guys back. And Ozan, thank you again so much for joining us, man. I really do appreciate it. This was a lot of fun.
No, this is great. I really appreciate it, Phil.
No worries. I'll see you soon. Good luck this summer.
Thank you.